Welcome to the Curiosity Chamber. The great and powerful Stephen Martin is back on the show. Stephen, thanks for joining me again. I appreciate you.
Oh, I'm happy to be here, Jay. Thanks for having me.
Of course. Yeah. I want to start off like this. You know, at night, my mind goes insane. I think about a lot of weird things, and figure this would be a good time to ask you, or just kind of like present it to you and kind of get your thoughts on this, if you don't mind.
All right.
You're like, what the hell are you about to say? So I'm thinking, like, you know how in most cases society tells us to retire when we're like around 60 years old? It's like the end of our lives.
Yeah.
So what does that mean? You know, it's like, so your best years of health-wise, they're beyond us. So, you know, you finally, you don't have to go to work, but you don't have the energy to do the shit that you probably want to do. So I almost think it should be kind of backwards. Like, go enjoy your retirement while you're young. When you have energy to go explore, go travel, go have kids, meet ladies, go meet the men if you're into that. You know, go live a full life. And then when you get older, you use those shittier remainder years health-wise, and you can be behind a cubicle or being a greeter at Walmart or whatever. I feel like that's when you should put focus on work. And how does that make you feel when I say that?
Well, you know, Jay, I'm actually past retirement age, and I have not retired because I would go crazy sitting around the house and, twiddling my thumbs. And of course, my wife could find plenty of things for me to do, but there are things I'd rather not have to do.
Right.
Like paint the house or power wash the deck or, you know, whatever she's got in mind. I like to write. That's kind of the thing that puts me in the zone. So that's what I do, you know, but I had a good time in my regular career, which was the advertising business. I love to create things, and I like, you know, creating ads for people. But now what I do is either I'm ghostwriting a book, or I'm writing one of under my own name, and I also work a couple days a week at the hardware store here, not too far from me, where I get to see people, all the neighbors and stuff like that. So I think if you people who do retire, you know, who was it that said retire and then expire? Because, you know, it's like if you're not doing anything that's important or needed anymore. And, you know, I'll never retire. They're going to have to carry me out of here feet first. That's what I have to say about it, Jay.
I get what you're saying. Yeah, I agree with you. So that's where my logic kind of comes in. Like, when you get older, you should work, like do something. You know, but when you're how do you feel about, like, if you're young? Do you think young lives should be? And I know that you were happy with your profession and what you did, but in most cases, I'd say a lot of people are just going through the motions. You know, and if you're unfortunate to be in a cubicle and you just work for a corporation and you don't see value in that, you're just kind of, you know, unfortunately being a sheep. Like, how do you feel about young lives just almost being wasted away? You know, like your good years of health, you should be, I just have this big feeling toward you should get out and go explore and go experience and live, just because, and this is tying into your book, just because we don't know, like, what happens at the end of this life once we do expire. So, like, lately I've just been thinking about, I should be going, experiencing things, meeting as many people as I can, just having a great time, you know, not irresponsibly, but just loving life and loving people and showing gratitude just while I'm here.
Well, you know, I think you're onto something there, and I do have some thoughts about this. And in fact, it does tie into this new book of mine called Mastery, Seek and Find Your Purpose and Find Meaning and Fulfillment. Because I think that if you're, you know, just going through the motions, as you said, you know, going to work in a cubicle for some big company or driving a bus or whatever it is, you know, and that's, you're just doing that to make a living, mm-hmm. You probably are kind of wasting your time. What I think you ought to do is, and this is in this new book of mine, Mastery, is figure out, and I give some ways to do that, figure out what it is, that what activity you really like to do. For me, it's writing. For somebody else, it may be some other activity. But what is it that puts you in the zone? And what puts you in the zone is what I call your dharma, which is what your sort of gift is that you're good at, that you can, you're probably better than most people at, if not better than everybody at. And then figure out what to do with that activity that can help other people in some way. I don't think it, you ought to just go out and try to make as much money as you can, pile up a big bank account, a big house in the suburbs and a Mercedes Benz. I don't think that's going to make you happy in the long run. I think what's going to make you happy is doing what you love to do. And if you can figure out how to do what you love to do, that in some way helps others or helps make the world a better place, then you're going to be happy and you're going to meet all the people you want to meet because they're going to be benefiting from your services, whatever it is you do that helps them. So to me, that's what life mastery would be, is to be able to love getting up on Monday morning and going to work and doing what you love to do and having that in some way either make the world a better place or help other people in some way. And that'll give you satisfaction because then you're living a life that's bigger than just for you. It's for others. And you're doing what you love. So there you go.
Yeah. You're spot on. Do you think that's a age thing that comes with age? Because I know, like, when you're a young buck, like fresh out of college, let's say, you want to make as much money as possible and you're competitive and you're like this egotistical being and you just want the nice things, the nice cars. And then sometimes it takes a while for you to navigate through life and go through these tough situations that really give you a perspective. And the perspective that you're speaking on right now, I'm kind of at that moment too, where it's like, do something that makes you happy. But for me personally, I like to make other people happy. So what can I do to make other people happy, which will fulfill me?
Yeah, well, you know, you're right on there. It probably is true. When I think back to, you know, when I finished college and went out in the world, I grew up in a family that people were, my father was in the advertising business. My older brother was in the advertising business. So it's kind of, you know, just doing what the family does. And I went off and worked for a big ad agency in Baltimore. And I had a good time. I met a lot of fun people and ended up making a fair amount of money. And then I joined my brother. We had an agency together, ad agency together. We had a good time, but eventually I felt like something was missing. Mm. And probably it hit me when I was around the age of, say, almost 40, 35 or so. And before that, when I was 25, I'd had this out-of-body experience. It was, I won't go into detail about how it occurred, but basically I had thought up until that moment that I had this out-of-body experience, that I was my body. You know, I believed what I was taught in school, which is that, you know, the only thing that exists is material substances. When you die, that's it. It's over. You know, there's nothing. There's no spiritual realm or anything. And then, through a combination of alcohol, marijuana, and a really bad case of the flu, I found myself up.
I call that the trifecta.
Up around the ceiling, looking down at my body on the bed. And it occurred to me in a flash, hey, I'm not my body. I'm up here. I'm my consciousness. And that sort of set me off. That was when I was about 25 years old. And that set me off on trying to figure out what was going on, you know, what's life all about. And so I started reading everything I could about metaphysics. I joined the Rosicrucian Order, which is a secret society that studies metaphysical laws and so forth. It's not a religion. It's just, you know, what is the true nature of reality is kind of what they're trying to figure out. And they know what's going on. But anyway, by the time I reached almost 40, even though I was enjoying my career, it's like I'd been there, done that. I was going around the track for another time, and it was like getting old. And so I decided to, and I love to write. And in the advertising business, I did a lot of writing, you know, writing ads, writing programs, writing presentations. And so writing proposals. So what I did was I started getting up in the morning at a little early, like 6 o'clock. And I'd work at my computer. I had an old Apple II. I'd work on that computer for about an hour writing a book. And 7 o'clock, I'd finish. I'd go take a shower and I'd go to work. Well, I did that every 5 days a week for about a year. And after that, I had a book. I published it. Or got it published. And
were those your intentions, that you were writing a book, or were you just writing just to write, and then it turned into a book?
I decided to write a book. It was a novel. Mm-hmm. It was. It's still in print. It's called The Search for Nina Fletcher. It's a romantic suspense novel, actually written from a woman's point of view, which was tricky. But anyway, the book did okay, but I didn't think it did as well as it should have, because it wasn't marketed very well by the publisher. So later on, I started a little publishing company, and it's called the Oakley Press. It started that in 1995, so almost 30 years ago. And I now have about 200 books in print. They're not, you know, most of them are somebody else's books that I've published. But I did that along with the advertising business for a while, and then realized that what I like to do was write books, and particularly books that have to do with the true nature of reality, which I believe is that we're all part of one great mind, that we're characters in that source's or the creator's mind, and we're characters in his dream that he's having, he or she is having. And so things like my recent book, Mastery, that takes off from that point of view and says, well, if that's the case, then what do you do? What is the purpose of life? And I've come to the conclusion the purpose of life is to evolve and to become the best person you become, because everything's been evolving for the last 3.8 billion years on this planet, including us. So I switch from when I advertising business, you know, I'd done it, been there, done that, got old, and made the transition into publishing, which I'm still doing well past my retirement age, and I love it. I enjoy it. I enjoy ghostwriting books for other people, because I learn what they know. And, you know, so, yeah, I think it is, when you get out of college, you want to make money, you want to be a big success, you know, rich and famous and all that, but that doesn't last. It doesn't keep you going. You gotta do something that is bigger than you, that you're part of, you know, that you're trying to, as I said, make the world a better place, or make other people happy, or something besides yourself.
It's like what you said. It's like you're evolving. You evolve. It's not, everything's just not stagnant. You're gonna keep on evolving.
Yep.
Such is life, right?
That's right. That's what life is about, I believe.
Yeah, so you touched on something very briefly I want to come back to. You said that you think that we are in something's dream. Is that how you, can you word it how you...
Yeah, well, you know, what's taught in school, the physics, the science that's taught in school is called physicalism or scientific materialism. And it's really 19th century, 18th and 19th century science. The fact of the matter is that quantum physicists have come along in the 20th century, and they'll tell you that kind of stuff that's still taught in school ain't true. There is much more than physical reality. For example, Max Planck, who is the guy who invented or developed quantum theory,
yeah,
says that the ground of being is consciousness. That a conscious mind makes those little atoms spin like little solar systems, that matter as such, as we think of it, hard matter, does not exist. It's energy. It's all energy. It's conscious energy. And there's a mind. He called it the matrix of all matter, an intelligent mind that's the matrix of all matter. And he's not the only quantum physicist who says that. I mean, this guy won the Nobel Prize for his work, but he's not by far the only. I've interviewed other quantum physicists who agree with him. And even Einstein, of course, his famous formula is E equals mc squared, energy equals mass times the speed of light squared. There is no matter. Einstein said, reality is merely an illusion, albeit a persistent one. So the fact of the matter is, when you really boil it all down, and I have some of this in the book that we're talking about, some evidence, scientific evidence, when you boil it all down, what we are part of is one big mind, and we each are characters within that mind, that dream that the mind is having, or that what that mind is imagining, I guess. We're each part of that. We're connected to it. We are extensions of it. And the whole idea is for this one mind to not only entertain itself, but to evolve. And the way the mind evolves is by us evolving and all the experiences that we have and the difficulties that we face and overcome are things that make us grow. And in this reality that we're in, Jay, is a very difficult reality to maneuver because we're constantly having stuff thrown at us that we have to deal with. And we can either face it and deal with it and overcome it and grow as a result, or we can just decide we're victims and give up and, you know, crawl into a hole. And we didn't come here to crawl into a hole. We came here to face those difficulties, to overcome them, and to evolve. So there you go.
Yeah, that's a lot. But I've had those thoughts too, what you're touching on. And even just like the physical look of like inside the brain, like the neurotransmitters. And then if you look at the galaxies, there's some like eerie similarities. Like they almost look the same.
And
you ever
seen
imagery of that?
The brain is a receiver of consciousness. Consciousness is the ground of being. And we experience that ground of being as the sense of being, of I am. And if each one of us has an ego, but that ego is not really us. That ego is the memories and the beliefs and things that have been formed since you were born based on the parents you had, the culture you were born into, the schools you went to and what you were taught. But it's not you. You are the, what I call, silent observer, the ground of being that is at the back of your mind that can step back if you want and watch those, think about those thoughts that come to you out of your ego mind, out of what you've learned and what you believe and so forth. You don't have to react to them. Some people think they are their egos and they get all tied up, you know, thinking they, oh, you know, I feel this way or that way and I have to do this because of that. You don't have to. You can step back and say, hey, wait a minute, why am I thinking this? And that is the part of you that is the ground of being that we're all connected to.
What are your thoughts on free will? I know there's a lot of people like to think that everything is just kind of the word fate. So it's like no matter what you do, you're going to end up at that spot. But then that kind of gets rid of free will if you believe in that. What are your thoughts?
Yeah,
on
I
that?
Don't believe. I think some people end up where they end up because of their thoughts and they think they're their ego and they're not exercising their free will. What I was just talking about, that ability to step back and actually consider the thoughts that come across your mind and take the ones you like and don't take the ones that aren't going to do you.
Yeah, no kidding.
In a good way.
Right.
I think you have free will. I think that's what the story of Adam and Eve is about. It's about the time in evolution when human beings developed the ability to step back and consider things, you know, like it's called objective awareness, being able to step outside yourself and figuratively and think about yourself. You know, what is the meaning of life? Why am I here? What do I want to do with what I've got? You know, the animals can't do that and don't do that. But humans, and of course, the story of Adam and Eve is that there's this tree of the fruit of the knowledge of good and evil, and the snake is telling Eve she ought to eat from it so she can be like God and know the difference between good and evil. Well, who is the snake? The snake's her ego. Her ego saying, hey, you know, I can do that. Do I want to do that? You know, or do I want to just continue to do what my instincts are telling me to do, what God is telling me to do? And she eats the fruit. And so what she did was she developed objective awareness, the ability to think about something that's either good or bad, good or evil. And the truth is what is what Shakespeare's character Hamlet said, which is there is there's nothing good or bad, but thinking makes it so. You know, if you have a fender bender in the parking lot, and you're going to think that's bad. But when you take it to the body and fender place to get fixed, the guy who owns that place is going to think it's good. Mm. So you see what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. The Adam and Eve story, I think it would make more sense if Adam ate the apple, because a lot of us men like to think with our snake, and that kind of, you know, gets us into some tricky situations. So I was just kind of replaying that in my head.
Yeah, well, I think Adam did eventually take a bite, didn't he? I don't remember. But anyway.
Well, let's talk about mastery. Discover and pursue your purpose. Find meaning and fulfillment. I guess my initial question is, have these topics always been important to you, or did this start becoming more central with age? Because these are some serious, heavy topics. Did it all start when you had that out-of-body experience, or was it before?
No, it didn't start then. I would say it's probably something that's come along with age. But my first, you know, it took me a long time to get over my education. You know, I took physics in college along with other chemistry. And, you know, we were taught that matter is all there is. It's Newtonian physics. It's not quantum physics. And, you know, I had a hard time letting go of that. So I joined the Rosicrucians, as I said, and they know what's going on. One of the first things you learn is that everything is vibrations. Nothing is solid. Everything that's, you know, and all is one. All is one creation that we're all part of. And I read different things. And at one point in the early 2000s, I had what was then called an internet radio show. And that focus of that was, well, the name of it was The Truth About Life. And I interviewed quantum physicists. I interviewed researchers who were studying children's memories of past lives. I interviewed people who were studying psychics and whether or not psychic mediums could actually do what they say they can do, which is communicate with disembodied spirits. I interviewed people who were studying psychic phenomena, you know, like haunted houses, all that kind of stuff. And over 100 people who were studying these kind of weird things. And I learned an awful lot from it. And eventually, I started thinking about, well, you know, we're part of this one big dream. What's it all about? Why are we here? The conclusion I came to is, we're here to evolve. Everything is evolving. Everything has been evolving for the last 3.8 billion years since the first single-celled organism formed in the primordial sea. And we've been, each of us has been evolving during that time, many lives. You know, I now can recall at least 3 or 4 of my past lives. And I couldn't do that until I did all this studying and did a lot of meditating.
We got to hit the brakes real quick. Why? You can't just skim over that. You remember three or four of your past lives. Let's go into that.
Well, the most recent one, I was a fighter pilot in World War II, and I got shot down. And I'm not sure which side I was on. I was either German or French or American or English, but it was in Europe, because the reason I recalled that life, my first wife was French, and we used to go to France for several weeks every summer, visit her family. And her father built an airplane for himself, and he actually built it in his dining room, a little airplane with a Volkswagen engine in it, a bug kind of Volkswagen engine. And we went out to the little airstrip that near there where they lived to watch him fly it. And I met this French guy who was a friend of my father-in-law, who had a two-seater plane. And he said, come on, go, I'll take you up. So I got in the two-seater plane with him, sitting next to him, kind of on, about like a Piper Cub. It wasn't a Piper Cub, but about that big. And we took off, got up in the air, and he said, here, take the controls. And so I said, oh, my God, I've never flown a plane. But anyway, when I put my hands on the joystick and started flying the plane, I thought, oh, I know how to do this. You know, and I was flying around. He said, here, well, take it down and land it. So I'm flying around, circling around and coming down to the runway. And it just hit me. I've done this before. And this vision of being in a fighter plane and in a dogfight and getting, you know, machine gunned came to me. And that's really all I remember of that particular past life. The one before that, I was an army officer in the Napoleonic Wars. I was a Russian army officer. And I was, the part I remember of that one is when I had a cannon that was not functioning. And I went to try to fix the thing. And the damn thing blew up and killed me. Ooh. But I do remember other bits and pieces of that life besides that.
That's so fascinating.
And the longest one ago, which I also remember the death part of, I guess I just remember the death parts of most of these. But I was actually a Chinese, this would have been in BC sometime, like a monk or a holy man. And I had psychic powers then, much stronger than I do now. And I remember that life, and also remember the death part of that life. So, and I do remember a little bit of another one that took place in Spain, probably in about the 16th or 17th century. But there I was worked with metal. Maybe I was a blacksmith or something like that.
I wonder if the deaths that are in vain are easier to kind of have like a remembrance of.
Yeah, I think so. When people, there are these regression therapists, some of them psychologists like Brian Weiss, who've written a book about it called Many Lives, Many Masters. He is still a psychiatrist, and he had a patient who had some sort of phobias, and he was regressing her with using hypnotism. He thought to her childhood to try to see what had happened then that was going to causing her to have these nightmares and things she was having dealing with. And he told her to go back to the time when this, whatever it was, first occurred. And she went back to a lifetime that took place 3,500 years ago. And this shocked him because he had no idea. He didn't believe in reincarnation. He was an ethnic Jew, but was not religious in any way. And anyway, he went with it. And he, over a period of time, regressed her to a number of lives where she had every time the same kind of issue. And so eventually she was able to overcome that by remembering what happened. And often it was the death part. So just as an aside here, let me say that it makes me think of Groundhog Day, if you've ever seen that movie.
Oh, yeah, totally. Yep.
Where he faces the same thing over and over and over again. He starts
out off a cliff, wakes up back in bed.
Yeah. And he finally, when he starts dealing with it in the situations in a way with some compassion and, you know, love and so forth, that's when he finally is able to move on. Well, I think that's kind of where we are as humans.
Interesting, yeah.
We keep facing the same kind of situations over and over till we get them right and we overcome them. So I think that's how we evolve.
So, yeah. That's a common theory. That's a common one. I like that one. That one kind of makes sense to me as well. But I want to touch, go back onto the your past lives, because there's like this giant inclination in me as well. When I, like, if I had to guess, if I was reincarnated and what life I lived before, there's like this giant gravitational pull to me, and it's like very specific. It's D-Day for World War II, getting out on the American side of one of those boats that was pulling up to the shores and just getting mowed down. And I took acid a couple years ago with a buddy, and we were in Florida, and we were just staring off into the woods, and I remember something just came over my mind and my body of just so much sadness for people that lost their lives, and like my brothers that were next to me, and just like their seed just died with them in that moment. We were all kids and we didn't want to be there, and like everything that could have been is not there anymore, all because we're fighting this crazy war for some, you know, like 12 people, you know, or like whoever's in charge. It's not like the majority of people don't want to be there fighting, is what I'm saying. And it's like, Unfortunately, sometimes the leaders, and there's not many of them, like a handful, decide that you're expendable, so you go over here and we gotta use your body as, you know, a shield, or try to take ground with using your body. So yeah, something just pulls at me with the military and D-Day, World War II. I like really big feelings for that.
Well, there's certainly a lot of people that lost their lives in World War II, 60 million or more in just
totally. So that, yeah. So when you're saying like you were like flying planes, that it almost makes sense. Like that, if everyone has a flashback like that, that's kind of like some of the era that you would imagine, because so many people lost their lives during that time.
That's right. And then they came back as baby boomers.
Right? No shit.
You know, big, you know, all at once, all these babies. Yeah, so makes sense to me too.
Yeah, if that's how it happens, that's crazy. So what do you think happens if you fulfill your life and you do your life's duty and you evolve? What's the next step then? Like if you don't get reincarnated again?
Yeah, that's a good question. And I do have some thoughts on that. Have you ever heard of the raw material? The Ra is R-A. Raw material, the Law of One series.
No,
it's Ra supposedly is some sort of extraterrestrial advanced being, but really a whole civilization that was channeled back in the early and mid 1980s. There are actually 5 books in the series, and according to Ra, and this makes sense to me, and you know, this is why I'm telling you this. Says that there are actually 7 different levels of existence. The first one, first density, would be just Earth before it had any life on it, air, wind, and fire. Earth with no life. Second density is Earth with life on it in the form of plants and animals, but just plants and animals. Level 3, third density, is Earth with plants and animals and sentient beings, that's us, who have objective awareness, like Adam and Eve, you know, who are able to think about things and step out of it, not follow just our instincts, but to have free will.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's level 3. And according to Ra, level 3 is where we are now. And we are, level 3 is the most difficult level of all 7, because it's where we face the most difficulties, but it's also the one where we evolve the fastest because of facing those difficulties. Level four, which is where you're headed if you're not going to necessarily need to come back again to learn more lessons or to settle karma or whatever reason you come back, is when we realize that we're all one, and we either go one direction or the other. One direction would be service to self. The other is service to others. And I tend to think service to others is the way I will go and the way I think most people will, which is that we use what we're good at. And that's what I've been talking about in this book, Mastery. We use what we're good at and what we like to do to help others in some way or to help the world be a better place. And then level five has to do with wisdom. Level four is love. Level five is wisdom. Level six is some combination of all of that. And level seven is where we return to the source, but we continue to have our own awareness and we become a new universe. I don't know if all of that is true, but I think the idea of those, of going through different levels and eventually reaching a stage where we're realize that we're all one and we need to help each other, I think that's what Jesus was talking about when he talked about the kingdom of heaven. He didn't call it fourth density, but I think that's what fourth density is. So to answer your question, we're in level three, and a lot of people are waking up and moving into level four. Edgar Cayce, the psychic, told some of his people that asked him questions that this was probably their last incarnation. So I think it is, could be. I don't know if it's my last one or not, but I hope it is. This is not a great place to be, this earth. It's hard.
Yeah, I'm with you. A couple more laps, maybe one more lap, one more victory lap, then I'm ready to get out of here.
Yeah.
Have you paid attention to cults that seek a higher power? I forgot who exactly it was, but they wore like Adidas shoes or Nike shoes, and they wore some goofy outfit, and they all took a poison, and
because they all drank the Kool-Aid. Yeah. That's all crazy stuff.
You don't think there's anything to that? Like they can.
I don't think we need to follow any human being in a cult-like way. I think that's asking for trouble.
Well, here's an interesting segue. Okay, so if we shouldn't follow a leader like that claims to be told stuff by an even higher power, well then, how do we feel about priests? Because essentially, that's what's happening. They're saying they're getting the word from God.
Yeah, they have the direct pipeline, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I would say I'm a follower of Jesus because I think he knew what he was talking about. And if you really read what he said and separate it out from all the other BS that the disciples came up, his words were interpreted by people who lived during that time. And they believed in, sacrificing lambs and birds. And they knew nothing about science, let alone quantum physics.
Right.
So, but if you just read his words, he was right on. I am the vine and you're the branches. That's we're all one. Mm-hmm. What I'm doing is not me, but the Father. That's the source. So I think he knew what he was talking about. But we don't need a priest to interpret that for us. I mean, that to me, that's just a power thing for the church.
I agree with that as well. I agree. Yeah, it's just something weird with humans happens, right? There's like this ego trip or this power trip or. So they always want to like, I know more, or I'm a chosen one, something like that. That's ego, right? If you're the chosen one.
Absolutely. Maybe. Jay, that's, I've brushed over it really quickly, but Ross says there are two ways to go. One is service to self. And that is the ego people who want to be in charge. You know, they want to be the dictator who tells everybody what to do because they think they're the smartest one in the room and they ought to be the one who's in charge. That's service to self.
Yeah.
Service to others is when you realize that you're a part of the whole and you need to contribute to the whole instead of, you know, dictating to the whole. So I don't want to incarnate on a level four, fourth density service to self planet, because that's going to be all a bunch of people who are trying to be king of the hill. I want to be
there right now.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's what's going on in our politics.
Exactly. You know, that's what it seems like, right? It's crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah, you just, I wish they can step, I wish a lot of things. I wish it wasn't set up like that, you know? It's almost, it sometimes it feels like a simulation about how our politics is set up. Like, there's no way it's set up like this and there's so much division when we're all human beings. How can, I know you probably see it clear too. I see it clear, like we're all human beings. How the fuck are we all not getting along? How is there so much division? And like, because you're from a different country, we need to bomb you or you need to bomb us? That's insanity.
I'm with you. I mean, but it's ego. That's why I'm saying you got to step. We need to learn to step back from our egos and really consider whether we're making good decisions and stuff, because, you know, and it's fear. People, you know, politicians try to make us afraid.
So
we'll follow them. And they have the answers, you know? Mm-hmm. And so we'll do what they say because they make us afraid, but they also say they're going to solve our problems. So it's all about the BS.
Yeah. It's a passage as old as time, divide and conquer.
Exactly.
All right. So what do you think since we evolve, we keep evolving. What do you think the next step is when we're talking about like the human being, like, because AI seems to be ramping up. Do you think that we're going to become one with AI? Like we're going to start having robotic people or however that looks like, I don't know how it's going to manifest, but it seems like that's the route we decided to take as a civilization.
Yeah, AI is an interesting subject, and I'm not sure that I've thought about it as much as some other people have, because I don't think a machine, I don't think a computer can become conscious. I think consciousness is the ground of being, but people who are materialists, physicalists, think that machines can become conscious because their idea of consciousness is information, and the more information and the more manipulating of that information you do, eventually that machine becomes consciousless, like HAL in 2001 Space Odyssey. I don't think that can happen because it's a machine. It's ones and zeros. It can simulate a human being, and it could probably be programmed to answer a lot of questions and, you know, do a lot of fantastic stuff, but it's never going to be conscious, at least. So I just don't worry about it as much. I think it's going to replace a lot of jobs, but then so has technology throughout. You know, when I first started in business a long time ago, everybody had a secretary and she answered the phone and she did the typing now there are no secretaries. There's just you and your computer. All of those secretaries were replaced by computers.
Well, like factories, you know?
Yeah. You know, back people used to weave cloth, you know, on a loom. Well, now you've got a machine that does that. So,
bingo.
I mean, it's buggy whips have gone because there are no more horses and buggies.
That's right. Yeah. Yeah. Now this sounds science fiction, but there's been talk about this, and this is way beyond me, but I listen to a lot of podcasts of people who are way more intelligent than I am, and they're talking about the possibility of uploading consciousness, a human consciousness, into a machine. So essentially, now when we're talking about these egotistical people, like if this was a possibility, they would obviously do that. They want to live forever. So they would upload their consciousness into a machine.
Yeah, I don't think that could happen because the consciousness, well, you might be able to upload what they know from all their writings and speeches and stuff into a computer, but it's not going to be their consciousness. And they might be able to make the computer look like and sound like that person, but it's not going to be that person because consciousness is not your mind. Your consciousness is the ground of being that observes your thoughts, your ego, you know, what your ego sends you or your memory bank sends you. And that's what consciousness is, and that cannot be uploaded into a computer.
I see what you're saying. It's real strange because if you like, if they can mimic perfectly who that person is, whatever question you ask this machine will give you the answer that it almost seems like it's conscious, but like we're saying that you can't be conscious, but they're going to give you every single answer as if you were talking to a conscious person.
I think that'll happen.
Just mimics.
But it's not the person. Another thing it won't have, it'll have everything that that person has ever written down or said, because, you know, said and was recorded, because all that can be put into the program. But it's not going to have their shadow. It's not going to have their dark side. Every one of us has a shadow or dark side, what Carl Jung called a shadow, and other people would sort of like Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde.
Right.
Well, Mr. Hyde was the shadow, I guess, maybe the other way around. But anyway, we don't expose that to everybody. And so it can't be the complete person without the shadow.
That's a fascinating point. Yeah, you don't see that too publicly, right?
No, all of us, you know, kind of keep that to ourselves. But we all have those thoughts. We all have that part of us. And if we don't recognize that we have that part of us, it can actually cause psychological problems. You have to realize that, you know, you're not a goody two shoes like you're pretending to be, right? 100%. Nobody is.
Yeah, if you see that, I mean, that's some flags would go off, right? Just constantly a chipper person. Like, what do you do at night? What's happening? What's in your basement?
Yeah, and we all have a temper, you know. We can get angry, and you don't show that if you can help it. At least, certainly not if you're a politician, although some people do, but anyway.
Yeah, right. Well, let's see. There's you have a chapter called Earth School.
Yeah, well, Earth is a school. Earth is the university you come to face difficulties and hardships so that you can grow, so that you can evolve. And once you realize that, it makes it a whole lot easier to face those problems and deal with them.
You think you can devolve? Like if you come back in a reincarnation, and since you don't remember anything, that you can do things worse than you have before?
Yeah. It is possible to devolve, as you say. In fact, are you familiar with Edgar Cayce at all?
No.
Edgar Cayce was a psychic who lived, his dates of his life were, he was born in 1877, he died in 1945. And for about 20 some years, he gave two psychic readings a day to people who contacted him with either health problems or psychological problems. And he would go into a self-induced trance and access what he called the Akashic Records, which is the universal mind, the universal subconscious that Carl Jung talked about, that has all the memories of everybody's lives and everything that's ever happened, you know, kind of the hard drive of the universe. And he would access that and give them solutions to their problems. And the reason I bring him up is that he said that it is possible to devolve.
Wow.
And the reason he knew that was that in his previous life, he had been a holy man in Egypt, he said, and he had these psychic powers. And in the previous life to the one that he was born into in 1877, he had been like a riverboat gambler who was able to access that information while he was still conscious. And so he was great at gambling and he was great at seducing women, but yeah, that was not how he should use those powers. And so when he came back the next time, his life from 1877 to 1945, he was unable to access those psychic powers while he was conscious. He had to go into a trance to do it so that he wouldn't misuse it. And so it's a long story to say, yes, it's possible to go downhill in a life and pay the price for it in the next one.
Well, that's interesting. Well, that raises another point. What do you think dreams are? Do you think we're tapping into another life?
Well, I think it's quite possible.
Another
dimension. I'm not probably very much of an authority on dreams because I don't remember many of my dreams. I don't. But I think that often dreams are your subconscious mind trying to tell you something, and they do it in symbolic ways because, you know, we're not always in touch with ourselves inside. And so I think it can come through in the form of a dream. I think one of the reasons that I don't have dreams that I remember particularly is that I'm fairly much in touch with my subconscious mind. So I don't need to have a dream telling me something. But I think that's part of it. I think you could also have, I know people who have visitations from loved ones who've passed away, mm-hmm. come to them in dreams, things like that. So yeah, dreams are interesting, but it's not really a subject that I've spent much time.
They are interesting. And again, how I started off this podcast with the crazy question when I was laying in bed at night, I also had this question. I was like, what came first, the dream or the life? So does that make sense when I say it like that? What came first, the dream or the life? So it's like, if you dream first, is what's more of your reality, I guess?
Oh, well, I think
if you were to dream first, then you woke up in your life. I don't know.
Well, life is, as I said, it's the it's a dream of the creator, of the source, and we're characters. And think about a dream. When you have a dream, there has to be a character in it to see what's going on. And in your dreams, that character is you. In the creator's dream, you and I are the characters in the dream, and we're also connected to and part of the creator. So we're the eyes and ears of the creator.
And have you ever heard of an NPC?
MP? No, what was that? What's that?
So it's like Nancy Paul Carey, NPC. It's a terminology that gamers use. It means non-player character, so it's the main character. So a lot of people are saying, like, are you the main character in life, or are you just an NPC?
So are you the bartender, or are you the person?
Exactly, yeah, you get it. Yeah. So sometimes I'll be, like, roaming through life. I'm like, this just makes life more complicated. I mean, I guess, does it really matter? I don't know.
I don't know. I mean, there are a lot of people who think that this is a simulation, that we're part of a computer program that's, been developed by a much more advanced civilization, and we're just avatars in this simulation. And I think, you know, in a way that's true because we're characters in the creator's dream, but I don't think the creator is an advanced civilization. But I can see why people would come to that conclusion, particularly if they're physicalists or scientific materialists who don't believe as if there's anything beyond the physical realm.
Well, we have VR right now, and we're in 2024, and we have something that's pretty good. So VR, you put a little headset over your eyes, and it, like, it puts you in this other world, essentially. Have you ever done a VR before?
I have not. I have not.
Okay, yeah, you're totally immersed in this world. It looks really good, especially if you put headphones on. So you're just completely boxed out of your human reality, and you're put into this another universe, basically. It's really good. So if we take that logic, and now we're saying that there are more advanced species than us, like even, let's say, 1,000 years more advanced. Well, what the hell does their gaming system look like?
Yeah.
You know, it would probably look like a simulation, and you wouldn't be able to tell if you were in it or not in it. So that's like where that theory comes from. So then you're talking about a species that's 1,000,000 years more advanced, and keep going, keep going. I mean, so it's just, yeah, it blow up your damn mind if you keep thinking about it. But yeah,
I think that's true. There's something to it. There's something to it.
Yeah, yeah. So how do you feel?
I'm sure there are other civilizations much more advanced than ours on other planets somewhere.
I'm sure.
I have no doubt about that. I mean, our planet's really fairly young compared to the age of the universe. The universe is at least 14 billion years, and our planet's only 4.5 billion years old.
That's insane to think about. Yeah, like what else is out there? And if they're visiting us, I imagine they have a pretty good cloak system to not be detected.
Yeah. And I would not be surprised about that.
Yeah, or if it's like more dimensions, like there's one dimension, two dimension, three dimension, four dimension. We're just not aware of it. We don't have the tools on our being to, you know, even navigate that or understand what's around us.
I agree with that as well.
Yeah, like the spirit realm, you know, what if they're around, still around us, and we just can't see it?
Well, as you know, Jesus said, in my Father's house, there are many rooms, and I think that's true.
Wow. How do you feel about your book? You satisfied with it? You wish you could
do something else? Yeah, I'm happy with it. I hope people will go to my website, and on the homepage there are my best sellers, and then you can click up at the top and find even more books I've written. But it's the new one is there with the title "New" over it, Mastery. But there's also one that I'm very fond of that's fairly recent. It was published less than a year ago, called Fast Track to Higher Consciousness. And it gets into a lot of the stuff we've been talking about today and gives the evidence, scientific evidence, research findings, and so forth that back up a lot of the things that we've been talking about. So, yeah, I hope people go to my website. It's shmartin.com, shmartin.com.
Awesome. Yeah, I'll go ahead and post that in the description as well. How can people find you besides your website?
Well, if you just Google my full name, Stephen Hawley Martin, Stephen with a PH, Hawley, H-A-W-L-E-Y, Martin, M-A-R-T-I-N, all kinds of things will come up, you know, magazine articles, podcasts, books I've written, page after page of stuff. So that's... And anybody can contact me through my website. Just use the contact form. I'll answer it within 24 hours. There's also my business website, which is oakleypress.com. And Oakley is spelled a little differently than usual. It's O-A-K-L-E-A, and then P-R-E-S-S. O-A-K-L-E-A-P-R-E-S-S.com. So get in touch with me.
Yeah, you're a cool guy, man. I love when you come on the podcast. We could just always chat, and I love these chats. I love them just because it's what life is, you know? It's what life is. There's so many questions to be asked, and I just kind of like going through these, I don't even know, man, just these crazy observations. And, you know, I didn't know that you had prior knowledge to living other lives. That was interesting.
Yep.
I mean, we talked before, but you never mentioned that.
Yeah, always something to talk about. Well, Jay, I've enjoyed talking with you today, and have me on again next time. I'll write another book. So
we I know you it. Will. I know you will. When you when you do write another book, contact me. We'll get you back on here. And I appreciate it. Keep doing your thing, Stephen. Thank you very much for joining me.
Thank you for having me.
All right, everyone at home, go get you a copy of Mastery. All right, go check out the website. Everything will be in the description of the podcast. Thanks for listening. Take care. Bye-bye.
Welcome to the Curiosity Chamber.